The following is a paid program.
To talk UK sports with the voice of the Wildcats, Tom Leach. This is the Leach Report Radio Network. Join in the discussion by tweeting your questions to at Leach Report or email leachreport at gmail.com. And you can call 877-904-1080. Now, along with an outstanding lineup of guests and broadcast to the most passionate fan base in America, the Big Blue Nation, here's the voice of the Wildcats, Tom Leach.
Wednesday edition of the Leach Report. Welcome into the show. We're served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington, and it is SEC Tournament Day. Two games get the tournament going tonight in Nashville, and then it's the full slate of four tomorrow and Friday. So fun times if you're a college basketball fan. And we're going to talk college hoops, the SEC Tournament, etc. today with our lineup of guests. Larry Connolly, the former Wildcat great, longtime partner with Tom Hammond on the SEC TV network. Chris Fisher from the Cat's Paws. And John Adams, who is a former national coordinator of officials. So we'll talk a little officiating. If you follow Oscar Combs on Twitter, you've probably seen John and Oscar exchanges about questions about calls, etc. So I've enjoyed his explanations, and so I thought it would be fun to get him on to talk a little bit as we move into the tournament about officiating. So we'll do that today. That's our guest lineup presented by Sleep Outfitters. Wildcat News of the Day, a service of Cardinal Point Financial Group, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. Missouri, Georgia, and then Texas A&M Vandy is the doubleheader tonight at Bridgestone Arena for the SEC Tournament. Mizzou just beat Georgia pretty handily. Vandy, of course, did not win during the regular season, but wouldn't be surprised if the Doors get a win tonight. I think I'd probably take Missouri and Vandy in the two games. A&M, by the way, reports are that Billy Kennedy is out as the head coach there, so maybe the Aggies will rally around him and get a victory. Kentucky players did media yesterday and talked about Reed Travis a lot. Obviously, that was a lot of the questions were focused on. The players said that Reed looked like his old self in his workout on Monday. Ashton Hagans was the only one that acknowledged that they would like to play Alabama since Alabama beat them during the regular season. Usually players don't take a stand on that particular type of question, but you figure they'd probably like to get a shot back at the team that beat them, so Ashton did confirm that. Cats will practice here today and then head to Nashville. And then they'll practice down there on Thursday and, of course, play Friday night against Bama or Ole Miss. Kentucky, a lot of people believe, with a couple of wins, could secure a one seed on Selection Sunday coming up at the end of the week. You wonder now if there could be a little shakeup on the one seed line because Gonzaga lost and lost convincingly last night to a team that wasn't going to be in the tournament, St. Mary's, in the WCC tournament final, 60-47, very decisive win for St. Mary's. So does that cost Gonzaga a one seed? I'm guessing probably not, but and I think it could. I think they're probably going to hang on to the one seed because the other competitors are going to be playing each other. In other words, Kentucky, Tennessee, one of them's got to lose if they play each other or lose before they would run into each other. And the same thing for Duke and Carolina. Either they're going to lose before they meet each other or one of them loses when they play each other. And the loser probably won't be able to overtake Gonzaga. If you had, say, Michigan State in a little better position, they might be able. And they still could. But the thing about it is they don't have their conference tournament final until Sunday afternoon. And I don't know that the committee would wait that long to see if Michigan State does, in fact, win the Big Ten. So Gonzaga probably hangs on to a one, but could be in question now. Congrats to NKU. They won the Horizon League last night, so the Norse are back in the tournament. They played Kentucky 2 years ago up in Indianapolis. Could meet again, I guess. I haven't seen anybody project that yet, but if Kentucky's a one, they wouldn't meet because NKU won't be a 16. I'm guessing they'd probably be a 14 or a 15, so Kentucky would have to be a 2 for that possibility to be on the table, I think. Coaches, all SEC teams came out yesterday. P.J. Washington named to the first team. Tyler Herro and Keldon Johnson to the second team. Keldon was named Freshman of the Year by the coaches. I was glad to see that because I thought it was kind of a toss-up between him and Tyler. So Tyler won the media Freshman of the Year voting, and Keldon, his roommate, won the coaches Freshman of the Year voting. Defensive Player of the Year, Ashton Hagans, shared that from the coaches with Tremont Waters from LSU. Baseball, Kentucky rallies to beat SIU Edwardsville 6-4. Four-run eighth inning carried Kentucky to the win over at Kentucky Proud Park, and Ryan Shinn came through big. He had the walk-off homer to beat Middle Tennessee on Sunday. Yesterday delivered a two-run single that broke the 4-4 tie in the bottom of the eighth, and Kentucky hung on to win. Softball, Kentucky rolled over Miami 9-1 at John Cropp Stadium. Links to the stories that we talk about each day can be found on the Bud Light Leach Report page at TomLeachKY.com. We are headed to a break. Served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington, it is the Leach Report Radio Network. Larry Conley joins the program when we come back.
This is the Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. You can follow Tom on Twitter. It's at TomLeachKY.
Quarter past the top of the hour, it's the Leach Report, served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington, as we welcome in Larry Conley to the program on the Kentucky Branded Hotline. How you doing, Larry?
Tom, I'm doing just great, thank you. I think I'm getting ready for one of the best weeks of basketball I've seen in some time. This thing's wide open. I watched Gonzaga play last night,
they
looked horrible.
They got drilled. I didn't watch. I watched just a little bit and then went to bed, but they... I figured they would come back. It was still close. They were behind, but it was still close when I left it. And they got thumped by St. Mary's. So I think I think Gonzaga is probably safe to hang on to their one seed only because Kentucky and Tennessee and Duke and Carolina are probably going to play each other.
You know what? Is that not strange? I mean, the way that has worked out.
Yeah.
I mean, they're going to end up not even playing for the championship of the league in the tournament. That these all the four of these teams are going to play each other like that. It's just the way it fell. I mean, obviously you can't draw it up any way you want. But I will tell you one thing: the Southeastern Conference had a pretty darn good year. I thought the three teams that they had at the top were just solid, really good teams.
Yeah, and I think there's a couple of other teams that could make a little noise. You know, win a game or two in the NCAA. I kind of liked Ole Miss. In the right matchup, they don't have a lot inside, but those guards are really good. You know, Mississippi State, I haven't seen as much of lately, but, you know, I think they're a good team. Auburn, if they're hitting threes, would have a shot to win a game or two. So it's been a tough year in the league.
Yeah, it has. And the way it's drawn up right now, a chance that Kentucky could play Ole Miss maybe on Friday.
Yeah, exactly. I kind of think that's probably what it's going to be. Before we get into this year's tournament, this is the 40th anniversary of the revival of the tournament. I kind of thought the league might do a little bit more with that because I remember it was a big deal when it came back in 79. They hadn't had it for over two decades. Down in Birmingham, Tennessee beat Kentucky in the finals, and Tennessee hadn't won it since in 40 years.
I don't mean to laugh.
Amazing.
I find that really strange.
When I see that stat, I always do as well. And, you know, that was a fun Kentucky year because it was the year after the championships. They lost a lot. They didn't have a great year, but they got hot and nearly won four. If Dwight Anderson hadn't gotten hurt, they would have had a great shot, I think, to win four in 4 days and play their way into the big tournament. They ended up in the NIT. But a lot of fun memories at this tournament since 79.
Well, and we've had so many great games. I mean, I have a lot of people who ask me now that I'm retired. They probably thought I was retired during the 40 years I was doing it. So, I get asked this question all the time. What were some of your better games that you ever did? And I always hearken back to those games that were played in the SEC tournament, particularly the ones in Atlanta. You know, you'd play there, and I'd go in, and I remember that first year that Arkansas played in the tournament. And, I mean, all of a sudden, I looked up, and there were as many Arkansas fans in there as there were Kentucky fans. That was that first year in 92, and I thought, my gosh, this league is going to be unbelievable with Arkansas in it. And then, of course, 2 years later, Arkansas wins the national championship. And you know what? Kentucky had a great team that year, too. They were really good.
You know, like 95, like yesterday may have been the anniversary of that game. I had it on my calendar because it was the overtime game at the Georgia Dome. I'm sure you and Tom were on the call where Kentucky rallied, got into overtime. Roderick Rhodes missed a couple of free throws and was just crushed, and Kentucky ended up winning it in overtime.
Yeah, and again, that was one of the better games that I've ever had. I will tell you, you've set those chairs at the sideline and done a lot of games. Probably the games you do the most are the ones that are not the most enjoyable.
Were you there in the building for the when the tornado hit?
Yes, I was.
Okay, I was too.
Well, let me correct that. I was doing the tournament, obviously, but Tom and I had done the early games.
That's what I wasn't sure which game you guys had done, yeah.
Yeah, we had done the early games, and he and I were having dinner at a very, very nice restaurant, as Tom and I usually do. And when we went out, Earl Anderson, who was our stats guy, was with us, and we were sitting there, and then somebody came over to the table who knew we were doing the games and said, "What about all that weather outside?" And Tom and I looked at each other and Earl and said, "Well, nothing we know about it. We're just going to sit here and enjoy it and kind of look outside occasionally." And we did. And it was horrible. I mean, I couldn't believe it. And then of course, they do something that they have never done. They moved the tournament. They moved the games. And they go over to Tech and decide to play over there.
Talk with Larry Conley. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll come back and get into this tournament that starts tonight down in Nashville. It's the Leach Report. We're served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington.
It's the Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. Coming up next, it's Kentucky Sports Radio with Matt Jones.
23 after the top of the hour, we are back with Larry Conley talking about the SEC tournament that starts tonight in Nashville. Kentucky, Tennessee, I would think one of those two ends up in the finals on Sunday. But with all the turmoil at LSU, if there are upsets, it seems more likely it might occur in the top half of the bracket. Who would be an upset candidate in this tournament this week for you?
I think it's Auburn.
Okay.
If there's going to be one club I thought that had a chance to upset in this tournament, they would be the team that I would pick. They're one of those clubs that they really got hot at the end when Bruce Pearl beat Tennessee, and I'm sure he was really happy about that. And for them to win that game and play the way they did, they really shoot the three really well, Tom. They're one of the best shooting teams from the outside of anybody I've seen this year. But I will tell you this, that I think one of those three teams, it'll either be LSU, Kentucky, or Tennessee, will win the tournament. I just don't see anybody else coming out. You know, maybe Auburn, but I don't see it. And I kind of feel badly for Will Wade. I mean, he created his own problems. I know that. But, boy, what a year they had. I mean, they played so well. And I just didn't see a team that I thought out there in the SEC, except for maybe Tennessee and Kentucky at times would jump up and challenge them. I thought LSU just had a terrific year.
Let's look at the national picture from the standpoint of, and since Keeneland's just around the corner, if you wanted to have an exacta box ticket to have the two teams that would be in the national championship game, how many teams would you want on your ticket?
Oh, wow. That's a great question. The teams that I really liked all year long, and I still like them. The fact that Duke has got all those freshmen, and I'm sure Zion Williamson's going to be back and ready to play again. I think the ACC really is loaded with really good teams. They've got Duke, they've got North Carolina, and they've got Virginia. I actually think Virginia's got the best team because of the way they play. They play so patiently, and they're a very, very experienced club. And that's what you want when you get into tournament play. You play the entire season, and you get at the end of the year. You want your best players out there playing, and they're the guys that really perform well. And I'm not sure they don't have the best set of guards in the country, and Jerome and Guy. I just think they're terrific. The other team that I watched them last night, but I will tell you that they've got a lot of talent, is Gonzaga. They're very experienced. They've got a lot of transfers, guys that have come over from other places. But they have got a really terrific basketball team. And they got one of the best players in Hashirawa, the 6'8 kid, that I think is just, he might be the best player in the country. I think he's terrific.
What do you think about how Kentucky's looking coming into this, assuming they get Reed Travis back here soon?
Well, that's a question I was going to ask you. I know you go to practice a lot, and you have a chance to sit down and watch him. Has he gotten himself back in good enough shape, playing shape, to be able to go out there and play 25 or 30 minutes? I'm not sure he has yet. But, you know, obviously somebody who would watch them on a daily basis and just make an evaluation, and I would trust what you say, he really has to come out there and play. I did see where, you know, they have other players like P.J. Washington made first team All-SEC, and Keldon Johnson, he was the freshman of the year, which kind of surprised me a little bit. But they're really dependent, I think, really on Reed Travis to get back into that starting lineup again. If he comes back and plays the game that I saw him play against Tennessee in Lexington, I thought he was just terrific then.
Yeah, he's with Kentucky. They don't have that, you know, the transcendent player, the John Wall, the Anthony Davis. But what they do have is a really good collection of players. And when you take one key piece out of that, it really hurts them, because they have the capability of playing and winning in a lot of different styles once they've got all their parts there. You know, with Reed and PJ, they can, you know, play a little more of a bully ball game. They can shoot it well. They got two really good wings if those guys are rolling. But you take out one key piece, and it certainly affects things. And I would have to think, you know, Reed will be somewhat limited. He's been out for a few weeks. Just the conditioning to get fully back might take a little time.
Right. I look at their team, and I kind of feel like you do. It's a rotation of eight players. I mean,
yeah.
Basically, you know, they get those eight guys, and everybody has a definite role that they play, and they play it well. And I'm not sure how they do when they've got one main cog in that wheel that falls off. And I'm talking about Travis. I mean, if he can't play, then everybody else has to pick it up. And I'm not sure that any of those other players have the kind of skills he has. I'm talking about his power play inside. He is really, really strong inside. Now, everybody else can do other things and do them well, but he's just the guy that kind of holds them together, frankly.
Yeah, and just have that older presence, but with him and PJ. And he and PJ were really starting to play well off each other when he went down. So yeah. Hopefully they can get back to that. It's going to be the interesting storyline of this week between Travis and Zion Williamson. A lot of people are going to be watching. Do they get back, and how do they look if they do? Larry, I appreciate the time. We'll let you go. Enjoy the games this week.
Tom, I'm going to enjoy it. I'll probably listen to it on radio, listen to you guys.
Good for you. Thank you so much. See you, Larry.
See you.
Larry Conley, one of the best as a player and as a broadcaster. And we had a show it did with with Larry and Tom Hammond a few years ago. We'll have to get them back on again and tell more stories. Chris Fisher from the Cats Paws, when we come right back.
You're tuned to Talk Radio 1080 and The Leach Report. And visit TomLeachKY.com for more news and views on the Cats.
Second half of our show for this Wednesday. The SEC tournament gets rolling today in Nashville, or tonight, with Missouri, Georgia, and then Texas A&M, Vandy, and then it's going full scale tomorrow. We have Chris Fisher on the line now from CatsPaws.com, and there's a story up there. Chris just tweeted about this. You can go to CatsPaws.com and see his story comparing Calipari's teams over the years going into postseason play. So what interesting nuggets did you come up with?
Well, I think, first of all, across the 13 different statistical categories, this Kentucky team kind of falls near the middle of the road. But when you consider there have been two historically great teams during that stretch and a couple other Final Four teams as well, not really speaking poorly about how the team has performed this season. But offensively, very much middle of the road. Defensively, kind of toward the bottom. I think part of that starts with the lack of rim protection. This team is tied for last in blocks per game during teams of the John Calipari era. Offensively, I think this is one of John Calipari's better shooting teams. They're third in terms of three-point percentage. They're first in free throw percentage. And typically, free throw attempts per game go up in the NCAA tournament. So that could be something to watch as Kentucky enters postseason play.
It's interesting. Cal has said all along that he thinks this could be his best three-point shooting team. And I think there's two different ways to look at it. I think that when he says that, people then look and see they, you know, made 2 out of 7 in the game against Florida on Saturday. Like, how could that be true? But if you look at it from a percentage standpoint, as you point out, it is close. I guess the one in 2011 was number one, but this one's pretty close.
Yeah, not far behind that 2010-2011 team and the national championship team in terms of three-point percentage. And another way you can look at it is just the sheer number of guys that you have on your team that you feel confident in making shots. And I think this Kentucky team has a lot of those guys: Kelvin Johnson, Tyler Hero, Emmanuel Quickley, Jamal Baker, although his percentages don't really bear that out this season. But all four of those guys, I feel like you feel pretty comfortable when they take an open perimeter shot.
It's interesting when you look at statistical profiles. Two of the last 3 years, Villanova's won the national championship, relying heavily on three-point shooting. In between was a Carolina team in 17 that beat Kentucky that didn't really rely too heavily. Those 16 and 17 Carolina teams that were runner-up and then champion were not they were very inside-oriented. Two of the leading title contenders this year in Kentucky and Tennessee are both near the bottom in terms of the percentage of points they get from the three-point line.
And it goes to show you that there's more than one way to skin a cat. And you look at John Calipari's 10 Kentucky teams and the trends among those teams. He wants to win a certain way. He wants to do it with defense and rebounding. You look at the defensive numbers. They're very, very consistent over the last decade. Field goal percentage defense wise, this team hasn't been great, but part of that is due to that slow start they got off to really early in the season, particularly when you look at 3-point field goal percentage defense.
See if you agree with me on this, that I think one thing that would really help Kentucky's chances is to get Ashton Hagans playing back to the level defensively that he was several weeks ago. I think he's not quite where he was during that January, maybe early part of February, particularly in the month of January. And I think they need to be even better than usual, maybe on the perimeter and pressuring the ball, because they don't have that rim protection that some of his other teams have had.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree with that sentiment. I think outside of getting Reed Travis back, I think getting Ashton Hagans going, not just offensively, but having him be the disruptive force that he was kind of midway through the SEC season will really take this Kentucky team to the next level. Ashton Hagans is at his best when he has the ball in his hands. He's getting downhill and he's finding guys around the basket, not necessarily looking to finish for himself. And the defensive energy, I think, from Ashton Hagans has to come back there during that month stretch, the middle part of the year. He was absolutely wreaking havoc on opposing teams' backcourts. And your defense, like you said, it starts on the ball. And if you can't defend the ball, then odds are you're not going to have a very effective defense. So it all starts with Ashton Hagans at both ends of the floor, dude.
Offensively, it looks like Hero and Johnson are trending up. I was looking at some numbers yesterday. Keldon averaged 18 a game last week in the two wins, so he seemed to be back in his groove after a little bit of a dip. And then Tyler, I was looking at the last six games. I think it's 18 points a game, 43% on threes, 62% on two-point shots, and that's with a really subpar game against Tennessee as one of those six.
Yeah, you take out that Tennessee game, and Tyler Hero's been absolutely on fire here over the last couple games of the regular season. I think Kermit Davis was really, really positive about Kentucky's two wings. And those are two guys that, you know, playing on opposite ends of the court can really put a lot of pressure on your defense. If you sag off of them, they can knock down perimeter shots. And if you play up on them, they're two guys that can really get to the rim. I think that's why John Calipari has been, you know, very hard on Tyler Hero all season long about not just settling for threes and trying to get to the rim. And he's been doing a lot of that here over the last couple of games.
Recruiting question, Kayon Brooks is announcing on Friday night, I guess during the time Kentucky will be playing. What are you hearing on the Kayon Brooks recruitment?
You know, when we look back on Kayon Brooks' recruitment, should he pick Kentucky on Friday, which I would give them a slight edge right now, I think we'll look back to his visit for the Tennessee game as the big turning point. He hasn't really made any official visits or unofficial visits outside of that trip to Lexington for the Tennessee game. So to get him on campus for a game of that magnitude, a win of that magnitude, I think really vaulted Kentucky to the top of his list. And like I said, I think as of right now, I would give Kentucky a slight edge, but just because it's Kentucky on Wednesday doesn't necessarily mean it'll be Kentucky on Friday. I think it's that close. And I also think there's a chance that he hasn't, you know, made a true and final decision.
At Chris Fisher 24/7 on Twitter, catspaws.com on the web. Thanks, Chris.
All right. Thanks, Tom.
18 away from the top of the hour. It's the Leach Report. We're served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington. You can find them in Hamburg or in the Palomar Center. Girls Sweet 16 getting underway today at Rupp Arena. So if you're in town for that or you got folks coming in town, go to Wild Eggs for your breakfast, brunch, or lunch, just like I did yesterday. It was over the Palomar location. So see you at Wild Eggs soon, hopefully. We'll get to a break. Come back with John Adams talking about officiating.
Look for the Leach Report on Facebook. Show updates, contests, and other cool stuff. Check it out today.
Quarter before the top of the hour as we're back into our Wednesday edition of the Leach Report. To the Kentucky branded hotline we go to bring on John Adams, the former national coordinator of officials for the NCAA, and you can follow him on Twitter at JWA Sports. And you should do that because you get some good insight on officiating. And John, we appreciate you coming on. I have enjoyed your Twitter exchanges with Oscar Combs over recent years. I'm assuming you guys must go back a ways. And
we know, long time.
And it's insightful. You learn, get some good answers to questions. For example, somebody sent you one this morning. If a pass is made from outside the 3-point line, deflected by the defense and goes in, is it a 2 or a 3? You gave him the answer. It's a 2. So you get some, answers to questions sometimes that, you don't know or think you do know the answer to and find out you don't. How many years did you coordinate the officials for the NCAA?
8 years.
Okay. So you've gone through a lot of these NCAA tournaments, and it gets crazy every year. There's so much passion for the for the games, for fans, and for coaches and players, and it's officials have a very difficult job. We get to my partner and I, Mike Pratt, get to know a lot of the guys through them being nice enough to visit with us a little bit there at courtside on games, and it is a thankless job in many ways. So tell us a little bit about how officials advance once they get now to the postseason. Like there's guys that are working the SEC.
Sure.
How do they get qualified to move on to the big tournament next week?
There are 32 automatic qualifying leagues in Division I. In each one of those leagues, just one guy in the tournament, guaranteed. much like a team. And then the national coordinator and the folks being listened to took another 6 to 8 guys for a total of 100. And all the leagues submit about 20 names for consideration. And then you actually go watch guys refereeing. I had 4 guys around the country that helped me called regional evaluators. And you put all that information in a hopper and try to pull out the best 100 guys to start the tournament.
As the tournament goes along from round to round, game to game, or maybe it's week to week, I don't know which, but guys are, I assume, evaluated on their performance to be able to get to work the next level, the next week, right?
Yeah, we evaluate every play, every game, for every referee. So if you were to ask me what happened in the third...
Oh, did we lose John? We lost the connection there for a second. I think John is... Shannon, try to call him back real quick. He's traveling for a trip. And I think we have a little bit of a cell issue. So, Shannon, see if you can reconnect real quick. I will buy us a little time, and then if not, we'll take a break and let him get a little further down the road and see if we can reconnect. In the meantime, let me get to an email we got from Scott on a topic we were talking about last week. Mark Story did his article about the last game in Rupp Arena that was coming up for Kentucky with the full capacity of around 24,000, and we were talking about the loudest crowds, and Scott offered up one that I don't think we touched on, which was a good one from when he was a student at UK. It was in December of 98 when Maryland came in, led by a player named Stevie Francis. They were number 2 in the country. Kentucky won the game, and he talked about how loud it was there, and I remember that game, and he's right, that would have to be certainly on the top 10 of any list. Let's see if we got John Adams back. Can you hear us, John?
Here.
All right. Well, we'll talk a little bit about how guys advance. So from week to week, so they're evaluated on their performance to get to advance onto the, you know, from the first and second rounds to the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight at Final Four, et cetera.
From 100 to 36 to 9 pretty quickly.
How many guys, so it's 9 for the Final Four?
Right.
That advance on. When you go through that evaluation, what... Are you guys, beyond you know, just technical things of being in the right position and those kind of things, what are some things you look for that maybe fans might not fully appreciate?
Some of it is how did our officials diffuse issues with coaches. In other words, we want guys that were able to handle the heat of the moment professionally. And that didn't always happen, but more often than not, it did. I remember a referee throwing out the Nebraska coach in a tournament game, and that was somewhat problematic when all was said and done.
Yeah, you want to, I'm sure, to give the gap, because there's, for players and coaches, it's, there's so much on the line and you know,
right,
et cetera, that you want to give them as much leeway as you can, right?
Absolutely. As long as it wasn't really MFing you personally,
yeah,
to your face, you can live with about anything else.
Let's talk about the monitors, because fans and I know broadcasters will talk about the going to the monitors and the frustration, yeah, of that. And yet also, as we saw with the Kentucky LSU game and the basket interference issue, people wanted them to be able to go to the monitor. Kentucky fans did anyway, to be able to make a change there, and they weren't permitted to. Do you see some more tweaking coming with that, say because of that Kentucky LSU situation and maybe others, where the things they can review will get expanded?
You know, it's interesting. Now I'm a fan, and I hate reviews. I hate it. I have told Vital and Seth Davis, I want to be able to review anything you want in the last minute of the game, period. I don't want any other reviews anymore. I'm tired of
it. It seems to take, and I guess they're looking... Because of, with
different
social media
angle.
Now, they're looking for consensus, and everybody has to get a look at it, and it seems to drag on forever.
Amazing, we've been playing for 100 years without doing this, and life went on. But, I mean, I get it. Same thing we talked about in terms of how important it is in these games for coaches, players, the money involved, and so on. But it is counterproductive to the entertainment value of the game, in my opinion.
What are some other things you think the game would be better served to change or to tweak from an officiating standpoint?
Well, I'll tell you, I cannot stand uniform numbers. You can't fit.
Amen to that.
Black jerseys with red numbers.
I had a Kentucky Notre Dame game several years ago where Notre Dame had some new uniforms for that game, and it was a black jersey with black numerals and just a narrow white outline around the numerals. That should be outlawed.
Well, they're actually illegal, but nobody wants to deal with it, except in the NCAA tournament. You have to submit your uniforms ahead of time.
Good. Because, yeah, that's...
So they always will be able to see the numbers.
Yeah, it's kind of just a pet peeve. It's from an announcer standpoint, but I'm sure it's the same way for officials. It's like, you know, and it should be, you know, think that fans want to be able to, you know, see the numbers, and there's somebody, you know, at a computer designing a uniform that think this looks really cool that's not going to be watching the game or officiating the game or broadcasting the game.
Real problem is coming.
Did we lose him? All right. Tell you what, let's take the break. We got one more break to take. If we can reconnect, we will. If not, we'll get him on another time. But you get some interesting insight there from John Adams, former national coordinator of officials, joining us on the Kentucky Branded Hotline. It's the Leach Report, served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington. Well, I couldn't reconnect with John Adams when we set this up. I think he told me he was going to be headed out on a golf trip today, so I think he's going through the mountains down there in Tennessee, and we just couldn't keep the connection. But some interesting stuff there. I thought it was kind of interesting that as a fan now, he doesn't like all the monitors that are involved either. And it just, I would have more patience for them, I think, if they could tighten up the review process and not take so long to make decisions. It would seem to be to me that if you can't make a decision in pretty quickly, that would be the definition of inconclusive, and you leave it as it was called on the court or on the field. So we appreciate him coming on, and if something controversial comes up, I sent him a note that we might holler back at him to get an explanation. So it's good to have that resource. Donato Slice of Wildcat History. This day in 2010, Kentucky beat Tennessee 74-45 at the SEC tournament in Nashville. And it was a big game for DeMarcus Cousins, 19-15. Kentucky had lost to Tennessee a few weeks earlier down in Knoxville and just destroyed the Vols that day. And, of course, then went on the next day to win the title, the first for John Calipari over Mississippi State in overtime, the first of six that he's won. Kentucky's going for five in a row starting on Friday night, and that hadn't been done in the SEC since Kentucky did it in 1950. We'll be back tomorrow from Nashville. See you then.
The Leach Report. Make sure you check out the podcast page at TomLeachKY.com whenever you miss a show.